Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the Matrix shit. Let's go hook him up!
By my co-host Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Many have I loved and many times been bitten. How are you, Ed?
I am currently half blind and it's getting on my nerves and annoying the living shit out of me.
Sorry to hear that. Did you get your eyes singed by Kane's fireball at SmackDown?
No, that'd probably be easier than what I'm dealing with. I've actually been having the pair of contacts that I've been using. I'm probably a few months, had them on a few months longer than I should have. I had to take a diabetic eye exam every year, and I had that today. So I got my eyes dilated, so I had to take my contacts off. So I'm barely coming down from having my eyes dilated, and when I was leaving the place, I put my contacts back on. When I got to my car and just about started driving, my right one ripped in half in my eye, which caused some very much discomfort, and I had to drive home like in pain, and so I get home, and then I just thought maybe something was in my eye, or I put the contact in backwards, and then I kind of adjusted, and I'm like, what the hell's going on? I pull it out, and I pulled only half of it out. And the other half kind of got behind my eye, so I had to deal with that for like an hour. I just barely got that out. So now I can't see out of my right eye. And my left eye, like I say, it's a few months on, and it's at the end of my So it's kind of my prescription has changed. So the contact in my left eye is not really strong enough as it should be. I can't really see out of my right eye. So right now I'm kind of fucked. And for some reason, Contreras keeps coming on and dropping off the line. And I have no idea what is going on with him, but hopefully he will get his ass back on pretty soon.
I see. Mm-hmm.
But other than that, everything's been cool. Other than that, oh, here's Contreras. What's going on, Contreras? Why do you keep hanging up? Hello?
This show's a bad
Contreras. Contreras, your phone is not working or something. You need to call back or something.
And why don't you want to try Skype again?
It's not Block Talk because you're coming out fine. It's his phone.
Oh, okay. Still.
He's called in four times, and four times he's hung up, so. See what happens here. Anyway, the topic for this week is going to be pro wrestlers versus the law enforcement, or the law, or the police, or the man, or the fuzz, or the pigs, or whatever you want to call them. I've called them way worse than that.
Yeah, I'm I'm just now getting an email from Couture that I'll be downloading here shortly, and we'll have our topic going in just a few minutes.
I actually already have it. I just can't read the goddamn thing unless I put my face all the way.
Yeah, I know.
So, as soon as yours will get lit up, we'll start on our topic with or without the church, because I don't know what the hell's going on with our resident redneck.
Well, did you go to SmackDown this week?
Actually, no, I did not.
Really? In your hometown?
It wasn't. Well, you know, my hookup's on the injured list, so he can't give me freebies, and I really didn't feel like spending the money because I'm about to spend $400 on WrestleMania tickets and $500 on airfare in about a week. So,
right.
Seeing a show without John Cena, CM Punk, or The Rock was not on my priority list this week.
Hmm. Well, I just got done watching a little bit of it because, we have satellite. And Kofi Kingston and Tony Cesaro was excellent. The finish was awesome as Tony whipped Kofi into the corner. Kofi jumped up on the top rope, flew back at him in Hurricane Rana position. As he went over to do the Hurricane Rana, Tony stopped him in midair and put him in the neutralizer. It was amazing.
That was pretty cool, but let's try this again. Couture, are you there?
Tell him just to go.
He's on, I mean. He's on. There's just nothing coming out of his fucking phone. Hello, Couture. What the hell's the deal? Probably got himself on. Dude, take yourself off a mute or something.
That's probably not it.
Oh, man. Well, he hung up again, so. Has that thing caught up, downloaded for you, Chris?
Pardon?
Has your email downloaded for you so we can get started?
Oh, yeah. With that said, I'm fairly nervous about this show if Katrina's not on it. I'll just be
Why?
Nervous. Why?
He's got everything in the email.
I know, but he's the knowledgeable one and remembers stuff.
I remember stuff, too.
Well, now, I got it right.
Let's try this
yeah.
again, Craig. Hold on.
Okay.
Hello, Couture, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
There
what
he
is. What is going on?
I don't know. It's something. I don't know if it's something wrong with my phone. Every time I pressed the one, there was no. I couldn't hear you talking or anything.
Maybe your one's broken.
Huh, because we saw you on the thing. We just every time we switched on, we just couldn't hear anything. But anyway, let's go ahead and get started since Craig's already all nervous and bringing down the show. Couture, would you like to start off our topic?
Do what now?
You want to start us off? Would you like to start with the first topic?
What are we doing?
Pro Wrestlers versus the Law. I think it was your idea.
Oh, yeah. That was a good idea, though.
It was
that
a good idea,
man.
So let's go ahead and get started, finally.
I found my list. Hold on. I'm flustered from this phone situation.
Here, I'll read the first story that Couture has posted. How about that?
Let's skip the first one and go down somewhere else.
Why? This is a great story.
These are great. All right,
go ahead. Go ahead.
The first one, Ed's favorite family in wrestling, Michael and Eric, in May of 1985, was charged with two counts of misdemeanor assault against an emergency room physician. A Denton County jury acquitted him. In November, he told his Lincoln Continental when he ran off an embankment but escaped only with a minor head injury. Go figure. Kevin went on television the next week to discuss the incident and blamed himself, saying he kept Mike up too late that night studying wrestling videotapes.
Ah.
He was late. Mike was later arrested and spent 5 hours in jail on drunk and disorderly charges. A few months later, criminal mischief charges were dismissed against him when he agreed to pay a Fort Worth man $900 for kicking in the door of his car. On April 11th of 1987, Mike left a bar in Denton and was swerving severely while driving home. An officer pulled him over, found a small bottle of marijuana, two bottles incorrectly labeled actually contained 78 pills of five varieties, mainly painkillers. Mike tried to bribe the cop, but then...
Did you just tell Craig?
When he failed the blood test, okay. While it showed up his alcohol level was at a legal 0.05, it also showed levels of drugs, presumably painkillers, Valium and such. He was arrested for drunk driving. Exactly. Barbiturates. He was arrested for drunk driving and a controlled substance charges and then was released, and it was the last time he was ever seen alive. Mike Von Erich, everybody.
Well, pretty much all of that happened after his bout with the toxic shock syndrome, which, basically he had a fever of 107 and fried his brain and was never the same. And, he was just a totally different person. And,
nothing around excuses now.
What's that?
Just not throw out excuses like your brain got fried or some silliness.
Well, his brain was fried. He was almost retarded, dude. I mean,
go in the ring and wrestle wrestling matches.
Yeah. He wasn't very good after that.
But then again, so was Benoit, so what am I saying?
Yeah.
True.
But, he just spiraled down. I mean, as soon as that shit happened, he spiraled down, he spiraled fast and spiraled hard and just got into all that trouble, and a few of them that Fritz was able to cover up and a few that he wasn't, and basically he just said fuck it and decided to stop embarrassing the family and hurting the family and took himself out.
I think I could have found a better way. That's just me.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you don't know what's in his head. I mean, like I say, when you have something like a traumatic, like things like that to your head, to your body, whatever, it changes people, and they just can't deal with it.
Yeah, he was no good in the ring anyway. No big deal.
I'm sure the pills and the alcohol did not help his head trauma.
Yeah.
Oh, did bribing somebody's cock?
Well, that's just flat too.
Women always do that to me. Grabbing my cock. Never mind.
I'm actually wondering who actually got in more trouble with the law between him and Carrie, because Carrie had his...
Carrie was going to prison, most likely, so... Anyway, that's
yeah.
Not our...
Oh, nice segue.
I'll go on the next
segue,
one.
Ed.
Let's see, in June 1986, Carrie was involved in a serious motorcycle accident. He was traveling in unsafe speed, riding his bike, wearing nothing but gym shorts and no shoes. He made an ill-advised pass and crashed into the back of a patrol car. I'm sorry. After 13 hours of a new process called microsurgery, they transplanted muscle and skin tissue. Carrie's back to his restore circulation, try to save his foot. He suffered a dislocated hip, a crushed right ankle, and many internal injuries. Nearly every specialist expressed any hope of him ever coming back to the ring. I think the story was he got up in the middle of the night or something and did all that work standing up. I don't know how true that is.
Yeah, Kevin says that he wanted to get a hamburger or something, so that's why he got up. So he probably got up to go to the bathroom, or he probably just got up for some just reason, just thinking he could actually do it. And he's probably on painkillers, and just probably took one step and fucked it all up. But the cops should have known who they were chasing or who was hauling ass, and they should have just got out of the way. Talking about a national treasure. They shouldn't have fucked with him. He should have had a free pass, a whole ass, but wherever he wanted.
A national treasure? Well, let me continue with the story, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
On Wednesday, February 17th, 1993, he was indicted that morning on cocaine possession charges, stemming from a January 13th arrest
He's already serving 10 years probation for forging drug prescriptions during a time about 1 year earlier when he was supposed to be attending rehab, and he was most likely going to be sent to prison. And later that day, he killed himself like a coward.
Shut the fuck up.
Well, I'm sorry. This
do you be a coward when you see my fist coming at your face?
Do what?
He's threatening you. File charges.
Did I just get threatened on the internet? That's on my fucking list. I wanted to be physically threatened over the internet. Oh. Well, I'm sorry. Oh. You know, this dude, look how big that dude is. He had an easy ride in prison. Shit, ain't nobody going to fuck with him.
Pussy.
Yeah. Oh, you got to go kill himself. Fuck everybody else's. Fuck the rest of the family up.
What rest of the family? Both of them are dead, dude.
His brother, his mother? His mother don't look after shit like that.
He had three other brothers that were gone. Dude, once you've been through, you know, close death in your family, it can change you, and you go through, like, three or four, you know, it just fucks your head even more, plus the fact that he is on drugs because of his foot. I mean,
Everybody got problems.
Yeah, well, some people decide to check out instead of fucking up.
He's gonna have his probation revoked and he's going to Sing Sing. See?
Yeah, well, maybe he didn't want to go to fucking jail. There's a lot of people who wouldn't want to go to jail.
Eventually, he'll get out.
Yeah, well, when you fuck some drugs, you fucking distort your fucking reality, dude.
I'm tired of hearing about all this drug shit. You do it, you do it. And go off and kill yourself like some kind of damn coward. It's fucked up.
There's a lot of other fucking cowards in pro wrestling, dude. There's a lot of fucking suicide. There's a lot of other fucking people. I don't hear you fucking saying that about them.
Who would you like me to say that about?
I'm fucking just about everyone else who's fucking killed themselves in pro wrestling.
Yeah, just in general, I think that's a infuriating thing. Somebody kill themselves over something silly like that. I don't like it. Because I had to deal with it in my life before, so I kind of think it's a coward's way out. Sorry, just my opinion.
Yeah, that is your opinion.
It's mine, right. Too. Just saying.
I'd rather just die in a car wreck than go kill yourself and you got all these people left behind saying, what could we have done for them? And I guess sit there for the rest of their life and think about that shit. Fucked up. Sorry. Going to rant.
I will take the next one.
Okay. Should be a fun one.
Oh, yeah. This one's my favorite, actually. The WWE and ECW champion Rob Van Dam and Sabu, also an ECW champion, were pulled over on U.S. 52 near Patrick Street in Hanging Rock at about 10:15 p.m. by Ohio State Patrol. The two were apparently driving for their performances at the Big Sandy Superstore Arena earlier that evening, according to the Ohio State Patrol. Rob Van Dam initially stopped for speeding. When the troopers approached his vehicle, they smelled marijuana and performed a search. The troopers found the wrestlers in possession of 18 grams of marijuana and 5 Vicodin. Sabu was charged with...
That's just over in half an ounce of weed, which ain't shit.
Never mind. Sabu was charged with possession of drug paraphernalia and also had 9 pills that were not immediately identifiable, but were known to be a controlled substance. According to the Ohio State Highway Patrol, both were cited and posted bond at the scene. RVD then dropped the WWE title on that Monday's Raw to Edge and the ECW title to the Big Show on the Tuesday night taping.
And then this whole time when this was going on, weren't they like shirtless?
I guess. I don't know.
I should hope so, because when you're riding in a car and you're shirtless, you're bound to get pulled over, because I've seen it every time on Cops.
If there's one substance, you got to be an idiot to drive while smoking dope. If there's one substance that has a distinct smell that everybody knows what it is, it's dope, right?
But it's you're absolutely right. But at the same time, it's the one substance that you can actually drive on while you're on. So people get, hey, I can drive while I'm fucking high, so let me go ahead. I won't get pulled over, and then
that's only because I can drive while I'm drunk. But that's only because I ain't had a wreck yet. When I have that wreck, it's always better off.
Yeah. You're not condone and or.
No, I just mean an example. I mean, I wasn't saying that.
I know.
There's a big difference between driving drunk and driving stoned.
Uh-huh.
I don't really think so.
Even Craig can agree to that statement.
Well, since you've obviously done it, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Well, I've done it too, but I'm smart enough not to do it now because, number one, I'm older. Of course, as older than me, but you guys do the math. Any drug that you take messes with your perception and impairs you. It doesn't matter if it's Vicodin or weed or what it is. That's what it does to you. It fogs your brain.
Yeah, I mean, I could go down the road drinking and driving. Say I could do that 200 times and not have a wreck. Then I'm going to sit here and say, drinking and driving, it's not that big a deal. I never have a wreck. But then when I have that one, that one wreck.
Yeah.
So.
Man.
He just got, the biggest push of his career.
Yep.
How long was he champion? Wasn't he just, champion for, one or two weeks and it fucking happened?
Well, he went, I think it was actually a month or so, because they went through one pay-per-view where he wrestled Edge as when he was defending the WWE title. And, yeah, I remember that morning they had, because they were going to do, this triple threat tag team match with RVD and Sabu against Cena and Ric Flair against, who else was it? Maybe Edge and, maybe Mick Foley or something that night. So instead they changed it to a triple threat with, the triple threat match that was supposed to be at the next pay-per-view or something, or on Saturday night's main event, they had just done it earlier with Cena and Edge, and Edge won the title. And then the next night he lost to the Big Show and Paul Heyman turned heel.
Yeah. Well, he's always fucking been his own worst enemy. When they first brought him in, when they did that little thing with ECW, I thought he was awesome, but apparently he was pissing everybody off backstage. So that's why they didn't keep him around. And then when he finally does come back, it takes a while before they actually give him that, the go with the push that the fans were giving him. And then he finally gets it, and then boom, gets arrested for fucking pot and as a champion. I've heard of a lot of wrestlers getting busted, but you don't usually hear about the world champion getting busted.
Jeff Hardy.
Was he the world champion when he got busted?
Get back to that later.
Oh, world champion. So.
He failed his drug test probably when he was the world champion, but I don't remember him getting arrested when he was world champion.
Well, that's always there now that he is the world champion, so it's going to happen. So.
Oh, that is true. It happens tonight.
And he gets time off next week when they go to England because he can't go overseas, so he can stay at home.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
You go ahead, Ed.
I can't read the things, and I don't want to go over this again, so please, because you too, keep reading.
Okay, I'll go with Vince McMahon. Sure, y'all have heard of him. on Friday, November the 19th, 1993, the Brooklyn, New York office of the U.S. Department of Justice indicted Vince McMahon and Titan Sports Incorporated. Charges against McMahon and his company were conspiracy, possession of steroids, and possession with intent to distribute. No actual wrestlers were indicted. On July the 24th, 1994, after deliberating for 16 hours, the jury found Vince McMahon and Titan Sports not guilty of any charges. The audience in the courtroom were said to be cheering. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Wasn't there the reason they got off was because it was insider information that was kind of accidentally given out, and kind of just screwed every. I mean, it was just this. For some reason, I remember it being like he got off because of just some stupid, something stupid that was overlooked or something that like that.
I don't know if it was that, but like I was reading some of those old observers from around like 1993 and 94 when they were doing all this. This is like way too much legalese speaking here for me to really understand.
Yeah.
Some of the shit they're talking about. I just say he was acquitted. All I know is the following Monday on Raw, when they opened up the show, Andy Savage was chanting not guilty on the mic, on the ring mic. But. And then, yeah. And then, like 2 years later, on the Halloween edition of Raw, Vince was in a like one of those goofy old prisoner outfits that got looked like they got the
yeah.
stripes and stuff. And Cornette said, "I knew they'd get you sooner or later." So. that could have ended the company right there, because I know at that time, you know, they had brought in Jerry Jarrett from Memphis. They were showing him how to do everything, because if Vince was going to go to jail, Jerry Jarrett was going to run the company. So,
Now, did any wrestlers actually testify against him?
I know Nails did.
Yeah.
But they were. He admitted that he hated the guy on the stand, and
yeah.
Didn't Tom Zink like? Or
I think Tom Zink just not so much testified against him; just you know told what he knew. Or something like that. Mm-hmm. No, bunch testified. Now Warrior, Hogan, I think Piper, Rick Martel, a bunch of people. Dan Spivey. I think there was a thing about it was like one of the Wild Samoans was in the audience. He was just staring at the jury or something. I don't know. Maybe it was intimidation.
I think one of the things is somebody let them know about the stop to get the Horian out of the picture. So they got the Horian out of there when this was kind of going on, right before this was going on. So
well, he was already in jail. He was in prison.
Yeah. And also, I think they had the wrong – okay, they said the package was shipped to the wrong address. They said it went here, but it actually went there. So because of that technicality, that kind of also helped them get off. Like I said, it's absurd that he got off. I mean, I remember like hearing Dave talk about it, and it just slips my mind all the details. But I mean, he got off. He got lucky. I mean, he just got off because of their own stupidity.
And he was having neck surgery there, so he was able to wear a neck brace and a cord for sympathy. here's another good event story. In 2006, a 22-year-old tanning salon employee, I think this is in Boca Raton, Florida, told police that she led a man to tanning room number 3. Supposedly that's one after tanning rooms 1 and 2. And then the man asked if she could use his camera phone to take his picture. She obliged and then gave the camera phone back to McMahon, who then showed her nude and semi-nude photos of himself on the camera phone. So says the police report. According to the report, the woman asked McMahon to stop. Once the 20-minute session was over, McMahon talked to her again, she told police. She walked over to the tanning suite, and McMahon followed, closed the door, and tried kissing her. She pushed McMahon away as he tried to lift up her shirt, she said. Newspaper reports say that after a tanning session, he sat in his car for 20 or 30 minutes before leaving. All I remember about this story is a week later was WrestleMania, and Vince McMahon showed up with the damnedest tan I've ever seen. It had been done on purpose. He's a troll. That's
his
one
whole life.
I like this man because he does shit, silly shit like that. He
shows his whole life as a rib.
Was it ever proven if he was, like, the whole thing was fabricated or was he there? I mean,
no, there was nothing ever done about it or heard about it again.
Yeah.
I think somebody may be trying to get money or something. I wouldn't put it past him, but I mean, there's.
Oh,
well,
not much to go
on. You remember, it wasn't that long ago they had the John Travolta, like, tanning or massage thing, like, where one masseuse, like, said that he wanted him to, you know, fuck around with him, and then all of a sudden there were, like, 2-3 other guys that came out, and then he never heard anything because, like, I guess the first one was fabricated or something.
I just remember that story was in the McMahon's story was in the news, and he showed up at WrestleMania with that tan. I said, yeah, that's a big fuck you to, to the police for whoever's doing this shit. That's the kind of stuff he does, you know, when legal stuff. He'll get a little jab in on the air or something like that.
And knowing what we know about McMahon, you know this happened. You know this happened. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that this happened. He's a 60-year-old man, and he's got nude pictures of himself on his camera phone.
We don't know that. He could have been lying about that.
Oh, please. You know he does.
How do I know that, Craig?
You just look at
him.
He's
got a guy named the 60 bitch.
But going back to the steroid, around the same time as the steroid trial, you remember the female referee? She filed a lawsuit against him for like sexual harassment at around that same time.
Yeah, I thought it was for rape. She said he raped her in like a limo.
Yeah, that's right.
I think the name was Rita Chatterton or something. She was in that. Her name was up in that whole gross shit with like Mel Phillips in the Beat.
It's so funny that all that shit came out all at the same time, dude. I mean, and she was pretty hot. I remember her.
I honestly don't remember her.
She was a hot little blonde. I kind of remember her.
I just remember when Terry Garvin and Pep Asman quit. I said, well, so that's where the Terry Garvin School of Self-Defense line came from Gorilla Monsoon all those years.
Right. And no, Phillips. You know, Mike Sawyer actually got invited on one of those little road trips, so he almost had Mel Phillips touch his feet, but luckily he didn't go.
That was some weird. These people in wrestling are fucking weird.
I always thought Mel Phillips was molesting them or like raping them. I didn't know he was just fucking with their feet.
He's like Snitsky, like they like
some feet. That's how absurd wrestling is. You got a guy, you think you have a molestation case going on, and it turns out the guy just likes to play with little boy's feet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how fucked up is that, dude?
I don't know. I don't even want to think about it.
Right.
You're talking on the foot worship, Craig?
Say again?
I said Craig stops on the guy who plays with the kid's feet.
What are you talking about?
Your thoughts on Mel Phillips?
I don't know anything about the dude.
It was awesome when Terry Funk beat him up when he put his cowboy hat on that one time.
Oh, that was Mel Phillips that he did? Oh, yeah, it was Mel Phillips that he did that. That's right.
I think it was Terry Funk's debut in WWF. It was in 85 or something. And
Mel Phillips was the guy who he would grab the ring jackets and take it to the back, and he'd put on Terry's hat, and Terry kicked his ass. Yeah, that was great. I remember that.
Okay, All right.
I got it. In 1993, Jerry Lawler was indicted for raping and sodomizing a 15-year-old girl, which caused him to miss the Survivor Series 1993. The charges were later dropped after the girl admitted she fabricated some of the story.
That's what it says. I don't think she fabricated a goddamn thing.
Okay. All right, that's not funny. She's a 15-year-old girl, my God. All right, this one is awesome. Later, Lawler was arrested on March 16th of 1999 after throwing a ticket at a police officer and running over the officer's foot.
Now, that's taking the gimmick of being the king too far.
Don't you know who I am?
Yeah, I remember the whole Jerry Lawler thing. Because he was in that big feud with Bret Hart in 93.
Yeah.
And they're going at that Survivor Series match, and these allegations came up and stuff like that.
We got Shawn Michaels' mites.
Yeah, 1 week, Shawn Michaels just appears and starts talking shit about Bret Hart, and it's like, what the hell happened? Where's the king? They didn't mention the rape thing on TV. He just wasn't there all of a sudden.
He didn't show back up until WrestleMania 10 was when he came back. I remember.
Wow.
The story was that I don't know. girl was like trying to make her boyfriend jealous or something. She said she was sleeping with all the wrestlers down at in Louisville or something like that. And the guy went and told the cops or something, and she was scared, and she kind of went along with it or something. That's just what I read. So, if anybody knows any different.
That's the cover up. You know, she was probably having a rat and having sex with Jerry Lawler, and then. You know, I don't think she was trying. I mean, she was probably trying to make him jealous, but she was probably telling him about it in a real event. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Jerry has a reputation, and, you know, he's just like that one singer. What's that one? That one singer who, Great Balls of Fire, who married his little cousin. I mean,
that's Jerry Lee Lewis.
Jerry Lee Lewis. He's the wrestling version of Jerry Lee Lewis, and,
he didn't have sex with his cousin.
That's
well,
true.
Okay, he didn't have sex with his cousin, but I can't. It's not very hard for me to see Jerry Lawler messing around with 15, 16 year old. I'm sorry.
That's really young, dude. That is so young.
And the raping, that's statutory. Let's not say like he held her down and you know, like banged the shit out of her.
I'm not saying he raped her. It wouldn't surprise me that they were having sex. I'm not saying he raped her, but I can, you know. I'm sorry, but I can see it. And then not just Jerry Lawler. I'm talking in the 80s, 70s, probably 70, 80% of the guys were having sex with minors.
They should have called all these people. Not kidding, it made a difference. But anyway,
yeah.
Speaking of rapists, let's go to our bar. July 16, 1989, Barr had a sexual encounter with a 19-year-old girl after a Pacific Northwest card in Pendleton, Oregon. For later filed rape charges, Barr continued to wrestle as Beetlejuice despite the charges and the attention brought to him in Pacific Northwest by the Portland Oregonian, I guess it's a newspaper. A year later, Barr was polygraphed as part of the police investigation, in which he admitted the girl did not consent, but he believed she would have been willing to have sex someplace else. Well, I think if you say that she didn't consent, then it don't really matter if you would have had it somewhere else. But, Barr worked a plea bargain and was convicted of first-degree sexual abuse. He was fined $1,000, based on 2 years probation, sentenced to 180 hours community service, served no jail time. He always maintained that he would have beaten the case in court, but was advised to take the plea since it involved no jail time. Also, if he lost, the bad publicity would harm the local wrestling business, driving away customers. Well, I think I'm already on the down slide anyway, so I didn't matter. And, I just remember there was somebody headed out for him somebody in the news headed out for him, and they remember when he got hired by WCW, they dropped a dime on him there because he was like, coming after the ring with children and stuff. So somebody had like some kind of a.
They kept writing the letters to whoever owned WCW at the time.
One of those commission assholes that didn't like the Barr family or something. I don't know.
So
yeah,
if you read the story, he said that he was taking a polygraph test and during the investigation, not consent. She would have been willing to have sex someplace else. Were they in a honey bucket?
Well, this is, goes back to what I was saying about Jerry Lawler. I mean, you have rats. You don't necessarily know how old they are. There are some 16-year-olds that don't look like they're 16-year-olds. You know, you don't want to. You see a hot chick, you want to have sex with her, you're going to hope. And, back then, people are going to ask for IDs or whatever. So I can see incidents happening. I'm not saying there's rape involved or this and that, but I'm saying that a lot of wrestlers probably had a lot of, you know, one-night stands or reps that were underage. And some of them probably not even knowing that they were, but some of them I'm sure they knew that they were. And, you know, if it was a different time, and I'm sure it happened a lot more than, you know, people think.
And can I just say this? Art Barr was so amazingly talented. I thought I knew what heat was, and then I saw that AAA pay-per-view And, you know, they get him and Eddie get in the ring, and he's, like, doing the motions for the backstroke. And these Hispanic people are losing their minds, going to kill this man. He's just so good.
I have a videotape.
His career, actually. You know?
Yeah, I mean, he went from being okay in Portland. He was part of like a semi-main eventer. When he went to WCW, he was kind of, he got pushed a little bit, but he wasn't a main eventer. And then he went to Mexico and was, you know, a main eventer and one of the most famous shows of all time. But I luckily have a videotape. It's like the best of those Gringos Locos. So basically, it starts before the Gringos Locos. It starts when he's still a babyface with the mask. And it goes all the way for him losing the mask, the double turn. Yes, they had like a double turn like Austin and Bret Hart did him in Blue Panther. And then from there, that's when he hooked up with Eddie. And that whole run was just incredible. I mean, I've never seen one man get so much like heat to where, you know, it was like, you know, the stories like you hear about Puerto Rico where everyone believes and they want to kill the heels. That's how it was when he came up. They just wanted to kill his ass.
Had the best frog splash, too.
Oh, yeah.
And they threw him like a frog.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
He actually
looked like a frog.
Yeah.
When he died, because they were getting ready to bring them into ECW to feud with Public Enemy, he and Eddie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But,
yeah.
He died, and then Eddie just came there as a single, so. He probably would have ended up like Eddie, you know, just going through WCW and into the WWF, I think, probably, after that. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's too bad.
I just remember he was in WCW in, like, 1991, teaming with Trucker Norman, and his name was The Juicer, a perfect name for a professional wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
He was awesome, though. I mean, he was one of my favorites at that time, but he just... But because
I
of that asshole writing the letters, he didn't stick around.
In the Pacific Northwest, I don't know if you remember that, Craig.
I remember some of his Beetlejuice stuff, just not a ton. Remember the character.
I remember the one guy like for WWF. He could go and work for Don Owen and Vince wouldn't do shit about it. He would always show up every once in a while.
They kind of think that up here in the Pacific Northwest, we're at the edge of the world. For some reason, and I mean everybody. I mean even NFL commentators to I don't know. It's weird. It doesn't count up here.
You ever seen a video where it's him and Rick Martel are attacking in the Pacific Northwest, and he breaks a bottle over his head and starts bleeding, gushing blood, and Rick Martel's looking at him like, "What the fuck?"
Who, Piper?
Yeah, Piper. It's Piper and Rick Martel. And Piper breaks a bottle over his head
or something.
Yeah, and he just starts gushing blood, and Rick's like looking at him kind of like to the corner of his eye, like, what the fuck is going on?
I remember watching an old John Cronus and Perry Saturn interview, and Perry Saturn must have gigged and then wiped his forehead clean, and they started rolling, and Perry was cutting this promo, and he was just getting worked up and worked up and worked up, and all of a sudden, his forehead opens up, and there's just blood just rolling down his face. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. Spontaneously busted open.
All right. Well, let's go back to Texas for this next one, Craig.
Pardon?
Go back to Texas for this next person.
Yes, we do go back to Texas for this. So, Ed, please restrain yourself. Chris Adams, on June 30th, while returning from a wrestling event in Puerto Rico, Adams headbutted an airline pilot, which resulted in a 90-day jail sentence and a $500 fine. During the fight, an intoxicated Adams became belligerent when liquor sales were stopped during the flight, and he had to be restrained by one Kerry Von Erich. Adams was arrested in February 1989 in Lofgren, Texas, after his wife, Toni, was found severely beaten, allegedly by Adams during a drunken rage, and he was sentenced to a year's probation. And there's also one more here. In April of 2000, Adams and his girlfriend of 4 months, Linda, we'll just call her Linda K, were both found unconscious inside a friend's apartment, the victims of an overdose on the drug GHB and alcohol. Adams recovered, but Linda did not, and died at a local hospital 10 hours later. Over a year later, Adams was indicted on manslaughter charges, but on October 7th of 2001, while awaiting trial, he was fatally shot in the chest during a drunken brawl with a friend known as Boo Ray, a.k.a. Brent Palladino. Okay, thank you. In
Waxahachie, Texas, the home of Dick Murdoch.
Thank you. At his home, the gun owner claimed self-defense, and he was found innocent of all charges. Wow.
Chris Adams is not a good person. He's one of those drunks. He's a mean drunk. You know, some drunks are happy, and some drunks just want to beat the piss out of you or something.
It's so funny. It's like he's, like, what do you call it, bipolar or dual personality.
Yeah.
Because if you look at, like, any interview, like to interview or other kind of interviews with Chris Adams, he comes off as the nicest, friendliest guy. You know, real friendly, just like you would never think that he's like that. But apparently you add a little alcohol and the dude acts more Native American than English and just goes absolutely fucking crazy and can't handle it. And I mean, you know, Stone Cold, Stone Cold Steve Austin became the biggest superstar. You'd think he would have some appreciation for the guy who trained him, but Stone Cold can't stand Chris Adams. He won't talk about Chris Adams. You know what I mean? I remember hearing, like,
later on, he kind of made Austin feel like he owed him, like, when, I think maybe Austin was working a show on the same night, and Adams wanted him to work his show and kind of made him, kind of pulled a guilt trip on him because he trained him and stuff like that. And we always find that, I don't know, it's always kind of silly. It's like, well, if it wasn't for Chris Adams, he wouldn't be anything in professional wrestling. I said, Adam just wanted to train him. All those years later, he's the one that done that, made himself possible. He just kind of opened the door for him, and we don't, like, owe him any more than that,
yeah.
I don't think.
I remember, like, Steven Regal on Wrestling Observer Live back in IATA, he didn't have anything, like, really nice to say about Chris Adams. I mean, apparently he was just a shady, shady dude, always trying to, he was a carny, you know, and always trying to make a buck. And
Can you imagine if you headbutted an airline pilot today? You'd probably get the death penalty or something. I don't know.
If there was an air marshal, you'd get shot in the head.
Yeah.
You know,
I just remember this because he had gone to the UWF at the end of 86 and then for 3 months he disappeared. I don't know where he was. I can't remember if it said so in the aftermath or whatever, but I remember when he came back they made a big deal about he went to prison for 3 months or, you know, because of this, and now he's back and he's, you know, telling the kids don't drink and do drugs, even though he probably did some before he even did that interview. And I know they made the storyline because Iceman called him a jailbird.
Did you imagine going out with Chris Adams and Gino Hernandez?
I stick with Gino. He seems nicer compared to this other fool.
Yeah, he seemed nicer when he was on TV, and he probably wasn't wired out of his mind, but, you know, once they got out, they were, you know, they were drinking and doing some serious cocaine. I mean, Jesus, they must have had some wild freaking, I mean, God, if they were wrestling world-class in that era, dude, I mean, Jesus.
I just want to go over to the Gino's apartment and see the sugar bowl full of coke. See if it's serious. That sounds so neat.
I'm sure he had one. I mean, jeez.
You
still have that DVD picture?
Yeah. The documentary?
Could you, like, burn it or something and send it to me? I want to see that again.
Yeah, sure, I can do that.
That was pretty interesting. I remember that one girl who was all, you could tell she'd done so much drugs, she was fucked up for life.
She was moving, and she didn't have no reason to be. She was just kind of, like my own cops when they stop somebody, look like they're staggering or something, and they can't sit still. You know, they're just always constantly moving or scratching or doing something.
Yeah.
Oh, like, you ever notice on cops how everybody, like, they got to have one last cigarette before they go in? Like, this is their last one. They're about to be shot.
Yeah. Doug Bounty Hunter, too.
It's like, this might be my last cigarette. Can I please let it smoke? Like, it's going to make shit better.
Become the calm my nerves before I go to the pokey.
Hey, that little nicotine just makes prison be just that much more bearable.
Okay, I'll go with the next one.
This is a long one.
I didn't know exactly what to put, so I just copied and pasted a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
But I'll read it. Mass transit incident from 1996 involving New Jack. In Boston, Axelrod had been scheduled to work a tag match with Devon Dudley against the gangsters New Jack and Mustafa, but could not compete due to a family emergency. He was probably high or on drugs or something else. Having nothing to do with that. Eric Kulas, an untrained 17-year-old boy who looked much older due to being 5'10 and 350 pounds, convinced ECW owner and booger Paul Heyman to let him to fill in for Rodden by lying that he was trained by Killer Kowalski. Heyman stated that afterward that he was unaware of Kulas' age. Kulas performed as Mass Transit, a Ralph Cramden-esque bus driver gimmick. During the match, Devon and New Jack brawled outside the ring while Mustafa and Transit fought inside the ring. The match was booked as a squash, and Devon was quickly isolated outside the ring. The gangsters then double-teamed Kulas inside the ring, with New Jack beating the young man forcefully with toasters, crutches, and various other objects. The end of the match saw New Jack blade Kulas and him bleed profusely. And I think he did that with, like, one of those X-Acto knives or something. It was the only thing with blade.
Yeah. I've seen that video.
That's even worse, dude. Have you ever had an X-Acto knife? That's a fucking, like, a fucking razor. I'd rather be killed with a knife.
Due to the event being a house show, the match was never televised. However, Extreme Fan Cam, a.k.a. Rob Feinstein, was on hand and recorded the event on a camcorder, which was used as evidence in later legal proceedings. Video footage showed New Jack asking Kulas, okay, I'll try to get the slang as best I can. You aight? Is that how you say you aight? Like, you're all right? That's me.
Very
intense. This prompted some to consider his actions moments later as part of the show and not representative of his true feelings. After the incident, the gangsters proceeded to work Kulas over even more, prompting Stephen Kulas, Eric's father, to scream, "Ring the fucking bell, he's 17 years old." As medics rushed into the ring to aid Kulas, New Jack grabbed the house microphone and said, "I don't care if the motherfucker dies. He's white. I don't like white people. I don't like people from Boston." I am the wrong nigger to fuck with. Don't yell at me. I'm quoting that. With the help of the internet, video of the incident has spread among the wrestling community. 3 years after the incident, Jerome New Jack Young was tried on charges of assault and battery with a dangerous weapon, later sued by the Kulas family. What the fuck do they think they're going to get out of New Jack? Or ECW, for that matter. Some tapes? Okay. After hearing about Kulas' request to New Jack to make him get color, a jury acquitted Young of all charges in the criminal trial, and he was later declared not liable in the civil trial. Eric Kulas died on May 12, 2002, at the age of 22 due to complications from gastric bypass surgery, stemming from his weight problems. He had weighed close to 300 pounds when he was 10 years old. Good God almighty. And had continued to have weight issues through his life. Well, parents, take care of your kids when they're that young, fuck's sake. We're raising a bunch of little butter balls.
Okay, a few things here. First off, I have a copy of this video.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of people have seen it. number one, if this kid was 350, then I'm a slim trim 140 pounds. That's number one.
Well,
number two.
How big do you think he was?
I would guess. I would guess over four bills.
Okay.
I would say about 430.
Looks even worse than he's very short. He's 5'10". You know, so
yeah.
Looked even fatter.
He was as wide as he was tall. Okay, that's number one. Number two, if you're in the locker room and you tell New Jack, I want to get color, you do the blade job. That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, I mean, to me, there's no real incident to discipline it start because he asked New Jack to fucking do it. And even New Jack was asking, telling them that he was stupid and, you know, to do it himself and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the kid was insistent, so New Jack's like, well, fuck it. Is this what you want? I'll give it to you. And, you know, New Jack's not the nicest person in the world, you know.
You don't.
So I can see him getting a little crazy, and you know, you got adrenaline going and the crowd and everything. I can see him going a little crazy, but you know, he cuts the shit out of him. I mean, have you ever seen the Jeremy Borash video of ECW?
Forever Hardcore?
Yeah, Forever Hardcore. New Jack talks about it. He talks about it actually calm and cool, but the last thing he says, so he just looks at the camera and yells, "Guilty and got away with it."
He's had a bunch of legit justifiable homicides in his life. So,
yeah.
I just remember, on this video, this kid was so worried about, he's in there, he's hurt, but he's like, you know how sometimes they do their faces so more blood comes out of their head?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they're straining,
so more
blood will just. That's what this kid was doing. So, I don't know.
It looked on the video, number one, Jack actually pulled a X-Acto knife out of his, you know, a box cutter out of his trousers and split the kid, looked like ear to ear. But the cut in the middle of his forehead when he hit the mat, it looked like you turned on a faucet.
Yeah.
It looked like water running out of a hose. It was ridiculous how much the kid was bleeding.
I mean, they had all these towels in there. Immediately they turned red. I mean,
yeah, it was disgusting. And, two things. You never ask New Jack to gig you, and you never ask Randy Savage to gig you. That's what I've learned from pro wrestling.
Who did Randy Savage gig?
Starcade,
Flair during that.
Exactly.
That show with all the Japanese guys.
Yes.
Or something.
What?
Yes.
Wait. Why would Flair ask Randy Savage to gig him? Flair gigged himself a million times.
Maybe Flair fucked up and then blamed it on Savage.
It was horrible.
I remember that picture because I saw it in WCW Magazine. They weren't really doing blood back then, you know. They kind of cut out doing that kind of stuff. So.
Well, he did it too much. The guy out there, and he blends it up that.
The guys like Tommy Rich and Flair with their hair, they always got colors the best.
Oh, I know, because their hair would turn red.
Or either Tommy in like one of those angles when he's out there in one of those white suits. And there's blood all over it and stuff like that. And
It was light blue, not white. It was always light blue, and it was always that funky ass kind of sport country kind of tuxedo looking thing.
Yeah.
And you were talking about making the face to have the blood come out. That was something Tommy Rich was one of the masters at.
Oh, awesome! I get hit by New Jack. He got hit by New Jack with a guitar, and he stood in the middle of his ring, like almost dancing, and then just going to make the blood come out of his head. He was turning beet red. kicks himself, and he's doing like a jig in the middle of the ring, and he looks like a thermometer about to pop, and just, he was classic.
You ever hear the stories of Abdul the Butcher in Las Vegas where he sticks poker chips in his head while he's in
yeah.
the stables?
Yeah. You know, Tommy Rich would have been on steroids. He'd be known as one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. Because he was so fucking awesome. He was so awesome. And then when everyone started getting jacked up, that's when he started getting a little flabby here or there. And, you know, had he been on steroids and had like a Magnum TA body, Tommy Rich would have been one of the most famous wrestlers of all time. That dude was so fucking good when he was young. I mean, he was so fucking awesome.
Yeah, I really never got to see him until like, I guess like maybe 89 when he came back to like the NWA or something like that. And that was, it was still pretty good. He actually had some pretty good matches with Lex Luger at the time. And that was the first time I got to see him.
He was just positioned, he was just kind of positioned as kind of like a mid-card jobber. He jobbed to the start at that point. But
yeah.
Did you ever go back and watch his early 80 run? You know, his stuff with Buzz Sawyer, his stuff with the Mass Superstar. You know, I mean, he was the top babyface in the whole world, you know, for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Craig, for this next person, there's so
yeah.
much on this person. I think you will do 1 year on Scott Hall, and then I will do the next one.
I'll tell you what. I'll read the whole thing, but I will pause in between indiscretions and
okay,
give
so
you guys room to talk.
Okay,
yeah.
There you go. Sorry.
Okay. 1983. Scott Hall was charged with second-degree murder after shooting a man with his own gun after wrestling it away from him in an altercation outside of a nightclub. According to Hall, this was done in self-defense. The charges were dropped due to lack of evidence. In a 2011 interview with ESPN, Hall admits killing the man and says he is unable to forget this incident.
That was the first time I ever heard of it. You think with all the websites and everything, you would know about it, but that blew my mind when I heard that.
Yeah, he kind of credits his problems later in life to this, you know, kind of fucking him up. So.
Okay. Here we go. That was the 80s. This is the 90s. Hall's problem with drugs were made public in the late 1990s. And he was, they were incorporated in a controversial WCW storyline. During the storyline, Hall was arrested for keying a limousine while intoxicated outside of a nightclub in Orlando, Florida, causing $2,000 damage. Okay. Hall's ex-wife, Dana, attributed their 1998 divorce to Hall being unable to control his drug use.
Didn't they, like, break up and get back together, like, 4 or 5 times or something?
That sounds like something they would do. On October 10th, 2008, Hall was arrested during a roast of the Iron Sheik. Oh, that would have been a good one. Held at the Crown Plaza in New Jersey. A comedian, Jimmy Graham, had joked after the Sheik and Hacksaw Duggan got caught snorting coke in the parking lot. His career fell faster than Owen Hart. An enraged Hall charged Graham and knocked him down out of the podium, then grabbed a microphone from him and then yelled about how Graham was disrespecting Hart. Graham described this incident on his MySpace page, claiming that he loved Hart as a wrestler and as a man. He believed Hart would have laughed at the joke. He claimed that Hall was drunk at the same time of the attack.
I bet he was. Guilty? Pretty sure he was.
Yeah.
I remember that. I mean, I remember seeing that footage. And,
yeah.
God, that was, I don't know, jokes like that, I don't know. It's a roast, that's the kind of shit they do there. So,
yeah.
I'm not that bothered by it.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to expect that for a roast. But the thing with Scott Hall, he's, he is such an alcoholic that this is just how bad he is. He's such an alcoholic that he was on that medication that makes you sick to your fucking stomach and makes you puke your living brains out if you have a drop of alcohol. Okay.
And abuse, I think it's called.
So he's taking that, and he's doing a program with Steve Austin, and Steve Austin pours beer on him, and just getting some beer on his lips, which caused him to get sick out of his mind. He went back to drinking a couple days later.
I'm sure he didn't need any help from anyone. Go back to drinking.
Yeah. Well, I mean, basically, he's got a deterrent. I mean, if he drinks it, he gets sick. He didn't care. He got drunk and got sick. He accepted the consequences. You know, that's how bad he needed to drink. That he didn't give a fuck that he's going to get that sick.
Isn't that the stuff they make Michael Hayes take after he got on stage at Stephanie's wedding or something? Drunk as Cooter Brown and was singing or something like that. I don't remember.
Okay, we got, let me find it. There's a lot here. 2010, Hall was arrested on May 14th of 2010 and charged with disorderly conduct and resisting a police officer. Police were called to the Hitching Post Bar in Cholula,
it looks like.
Thank you. After Hall, who had, quote-unquote, been drinking heavily, according to the police report, he, quote-unquote, became aggressive. When they arrived, they found Hall yelling and cursing at amateur wrestling personalities and bar staff. Hall was told that he was not allowed to return to the establishment. In the police statement, Hall described himself as an unemployed professional wrestler despite having a job with TNA.
They pay more TNA, they don't even consider that a job. It's like Skid Row or something, I don't know.
I'm between jobs right now. Well, I kind of have a job. It's like a paper route, no offense, Ed. Okay. After his release from TNA, Hall checked into rehab, paid for by the WWE. Hall checked out of rehab, the rehab facility in early October 2010. Weeks after he checked into rehab, Hall had both a defibrillator and a pacemaker implanted in his chest. He was hospitalized twice in 2010 for double pneumonia. And during that time, Hall stated having dozens of seizures as well as soon diagnosed with epilepsy. He now has to take 11 different medications on a daily basis to treat his heart and seizure problems.
Well, that's pretty fucked up.
I'll say. 2011. Hall was the only member of the clique not on hand to see longtime friend Shawn Michaels inducted to the WWE Hall of Fame. He had decided not to attend any WrestleMania festivities due to his doubts of his ability to remain sober in that type of environment. On October 6th, Hall was reportedly taken to the hospital due to a seizure. Hall's representative, Gina Anik, issued a press release denying the reports that he had overdosed, saying that Hall was at home and doing fine that day. Anik said Hall was in a hospital that night for being treated for an extremely low blood pressure and that Hall had visited his doctor on a regular basis while recovering from double pneumonia for blood work and checkups. 2 days later, on April 8th, Hall showed up for his appearance at a Top Rope Promotions wrestling show in Fall River, Massachusetts, apparently intoxicated. If you've seen the tape, there's no apparently involved there. Hall was still wearing a hospital bracelet and was helped to the ring by two men because he was struggling to walk on his own. He cut
and
a promo.
They still had him bump later in the ring.
He cut a promo and was confronted by local wrestler Gino Giovanni, who was trying to begin his scheduled match with Justin Credible. After the match, between Giovanni and Credible, Hall slurred his words and tried to goad Giovanni back into the ring. The next day, on April 9th, TMZ reported Hall had been taken to the hospital. Following the previous day's appearance, Hall was treated for cardiac issues and remained hospitalized for 3 days. According to the medical reports, Hall was being treated after overdosing on both opiates and benzodiazepines. The next day, actually April 11th, Top Rope Promotions released a statement regarding Hall's behavior and performance. Promoter Steve Richards said Hall had arrived the day before the event in a wheelchair with 3 bottles of prescription pills in his possession and had demanded his appearance fee for the next day. Although he was already paid, Hall allegedly made many, many threats to the staff and many demands regarding money and when he would perform. According to Richards, Hall threatened to kill himself if he screwed Hall. Hall threatened to kill him if Hall screwed him over. Yeah, this, I think everybody's seen the video of this. I mean, it was on the ESPN 360 show. And
I mean, he was needed to be propped up just to do that little bit where he spins around and does a punch.
Yeah.
It's like
you could have timed him. Yeah, you could have timed him with a sundial.
He seemed less coherent than Mike Von Erich did that interview when he looked like a skeleton.
If you go to like Yahoo and do like an image search that says "Got Hall mugshot," there's like 30 pictures, different pictures that come up.
Ooh.
Oh, jeez. That's just the definition of a pro wrestling fuck up, and unfortunately, he might be the biggest pro wrestling fuck up. Maybe Jake the Snake might have him.
No, I don't think Jake the Snake is as bad as this.
Yeah.
Hey, Jake's doing good right now.
Panther, I heard Hall was trying to go live with DDP like Jake is, or something.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Wrestling
rehab with DDP and Jake the Snake and Scott Hall and.
And Marty Jannetty.
And Sonny.
Buys. Call Eric Bischoff and get him on this.
But, yeah, I mean, Jesus. You talk about someone being their own worst enemy. I mean, this dude takes the cake. I mean,
like I
said, biggest fuck up in pro wrestling as far as that. I mean, I don't think he'll ever really. He might be seen here or there for a week or two. But I just don't see him ever getting clean, and it won't be too long, unfortunately, before we're doing a show about his death.
Yeah.
We've been saying that for like 5 years.
True.
He's got to be at the top of the Deadpool, right?
He's up there.
In wrestling? Oh, yeah. He's way up there. He's right there.
Just do with their bodies what they want, and I don't know if it's. And they live to be like 75 years old or something like that.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. Longtime friend Kevin Nash commented on Hall's recent problems, saying that he will always be there for Hall. Nash also claimed that Hall is not a drug addict, but rather deals from post-traumatic stress disorder. Eric Bischoff, another one of Hall's close friends and former boss, said he wished he knew how to help him and that he was an amazing talent and a great person, but his demons were killing him. On May 8th, this is in 2011, following a worried and confusing phone call conversation with his ex-wife, Dana, Hall abruptly ended the call. Dana alerted police for concerns for his safety, and Hall allegedly had a verbal altercation with them and her when they attempted to enter the house. Dana said Hall was threatening to beat them all up, doing the crotch chop thing to them, making a fool of himself, ranting and raving like a crazed mental person. Following this, Dana cut off all remaining ties with Hall. Good for you.
I can imagine the police showing up and getting the crash shop.
And first off, she went back to him dozens and dozens of times. It should be a matter of time before she goes back to him or has something to do with him again. I don't believe that for a second.
Yeah, they
living
the gimmick. A lot of times people with living with drug addicts need that in their lives, the codependency. I'm no Dr. Drew, but I do listen to him.
I just roll him at the house. That's what I've done.
Oh, I wish they had video of him crotch chopping the police. That's amazing.
Who doesn't crotch chop the police on a daily basis?
Scott Hall. And possibly the road dog. I don't know. Around this time, Scott Hall and his estranged son Cody had a brief reconciliation, and Hall began mentoring him to become a professional wrestler. According to Dana, this reconciliation only lasted a month. On October 20th, ESPN's E60 featured a documentary detailing Hall's experience with drugs and alcohol. It included interviews with several of Hall's family members, including his ex-wife and his son Cody, as well as several prominent figures and close friends from the wrestling industry, including Hulk Hogan, Kevin Nash, Sean Waltman, Eric Bischoff, and Stephanie McMahon. And last, but certainly not least, 2012, on April 6th, April was not a good month for Mr. Hall. On April 6th, Hall was arrested in Florida around 9:31 p.m. by deputies of the Seminole County Sheriff's offices who did not make the reason for the arrest public. The arrest was later reported as a domestic disturbance involving his girlfriend, Lisa Howell. Hall allegedly choked Howell while he was drunk. He was taken to the hospital in Seminole County to be medically cleared prior to being taken to the drunk tank. Hall denies the choking allegations. So let me get this straight. You have to be medically cleared before you go to the drunk tank. Interesting.
I remember I went to college in Louisiana, and they had this, like, in this town, they had this, like, big, like, Christmas light celebration every year. And so instead of the drunk tank, they had the drunk pool, where they had this big-ass swimming pool with no water in it. They took all the drunks and made them go get down in this pool so they could sober their asses up.
That's awesome. I imagine them, you know, the police bring him in. Okay, he needs a medical evaluation before we can throw him in the drunk tank. All right, sir, can you breathe on me, please? Yeah, he's drunk. Go ahead and throw him in there.
I
think that's the end of Scott Hall and this thing. Right?
That is, well, that's the end of the story of Scott Hall.
They need to put him in a permanent straitjacket and just have someone hired who's there to feed him, to give him food and give him water.
Yeah.
And he can have control of his arms and hands. That might be the only way to keep him from drinking.
Yes, lock him in a room with Dr. Drew and his staff, and do not let him move out of the corner, and you just physically take care of him until he gets off everything, and then you don't let him leave.
I remember my dad, when I was younger, had a hunting dog that had cancer, so he'd take it out back into the woods and put it down. Might be right here. I don't know.
You know what? Speaking of PTSD and cats being put down, when I was 4 years old, my dad had to put my cat Tigger down, but he took it out back in the backyard and in the backwoods, shot the cat in the head, and the cat got this sudden rush of adrenaline and ran at least 75 yards and into the garage. And I walked out into the garage, and there's a cat laying in the middle of the garage, big hole in his head, and blood everywhere.
That's horrifying.
I was 4.
That's pretty fucked up.
And I remember looking.
All this stuff with Scott Hall happened in April. Maybe these are April Fool's jokes gone wrong or something.
Gotcha.
Let's go to a somewhat normal person. 2008. Hardy was involved in an incident at Nashville International Airport's Southwest Gate. Southwest airline employee reported that Hardy appeared to be intoxicated and therefore was not allowed to board the flight. He was not, however, arrested, as he was said to be calm and cooperative, and he made other arrangements to get home.
Yeah.
In September 11th, 2009, Hardy was arrested on charges of trafficking and controlled prescription pills and possession of anabolic steroids. After a search of his house yielded 262 Vicodin prescription pills, 190 somas, 555 milliliters of anabolic steroids, a residual amount of powder cocaine. Like, after all these pills, like, it kind of tames residual amount of powder cocaine. And
yeah, you take out the steroids, and that sounds like fucking heaven.
It does, actually. This is like a drug addiction waiting to happen fast and shit like this.
I would feel no pain for the rest of my life if I had that.
Over a year later, the district attorney announced that Hardy would plead guilty to the charges on September 8, 2011. Hardy was sentenced to 10 days in jail, 30 months of probation, and a fine of $100,000. Hardy served his jail sentence from October the 3rd to October the 13th, 2011. That seems very light for all this shit.
Yeah.
Well, and look how long it took him for all that shit to fucking finally go down. I mean,
yeah,
now you talk about the trial that wouldn't end.
God, I like it. Just got nauseated every time I heard about a continuance in this case. A continuance in this case.
Yeah.
Another continuance.
And I remember the last continuance that he had, I had to laugh, and I texted Brian immediately. It was on April 20th. It was on 420.
If he just stuck with the 420 stuff, maybe he wouldn't have been in such bad shape. Right? He's got
exactly.
All these skills.
Speaking of, in a
yes,
yeah,
but Vicodin is so good, dude. I love Vicodin.
This happened in September, and here's the funny thing: that following April, Brian and I take our trip to WrestleMania, and Brian, I don't know why, but he decided to cut loose, and he had a drink in the bar before we got on the plane. We got on the plane, and he immediately orders another drink. He gets done with the drink, and he's got the tray table down, and he goes to cross his legs, and he hits the table, and a water flies high in the air, just raining on everybody in his row. He orders another drink, and then knocks the water over on the lady next to him again. At this time, I pull out my phone and text Vinny, we're going to have a Jeff Hardy incident with Brian on this. It was amazing. He knocked over three different waters on this woman and was just giggling drunk. The whole, okay, cut this out of the show. I'm telling
you. How come you share with Brian, but you never give me any?
What are you talking about? These were all drinks. Brian was having drinks the whole time.
He had more than, well, never mind. I guess we're kayfabing that part of the story.
We should have got Vinny to call in with his carjacking story.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Oh, gosh. And then there was the time, there is one more story, but I'll tell you this one. I almost got in trouble for aiding and abetting. See, Buddy Wayne had gotten, he'll tell you this, he had gotten a DUI. And he had somebody drive him to Canada, to Cloverdale, and just somebody drove him over the border. And so we wrestled that night. Or no, the kid drove his car. That's right. And we got done wrestling, and Brian comes up to me and goes, hey, do you know Buddy Wayne? I said, kinda. He says, you want to drive him home? Why? I don't know. He just wants to drink, I guess, I suppose. So as we're approaching the border, Buddy goes, just be cool, man. I'm not supposed to be here.
excuse me. And then he tells me the story. Ah, it's just BS. You know, they got a DUI. So we get past the border agent, thank God. And the first thing we do is pull into a quickie mart. He gets in. He goes in and grabs a sixer, a Big Mouth Mickey's, and a can of Chew. And we're on our way 3 hours down the road. And he's drinking Mickey's, crushing the cans, and throwing them back at Brian's car down the highway. Unbelievable. But you wait.
See, I was kind of thinking, you know, Brian might not have known what was really up, but then he said that his car was right behind. So, yeah. Brian just sacrificed you to get arrested for aiding and abetting and was going to drive on by when they arrested your ass?
Probably.
That was pretty smart of him. I got to give him credit for that.
Hey, Ed, throw out the plug.
Well, we actually have way more time, but I'll go ahead and throw them out. Everyone, check out angrymarks.com. You can always download the Stream Marks show at angrymarks.com along with a lot of other shows. So check out angrymarks.com. You can also download our shows at blogtalkradio.com/Cotrera and older shows at blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo. And you can follow me on Twitter at Ed in San Antonio, and you can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo or at Ed in San Antonio.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Proper Jam, at Proper Jam, and Sandman. Send me your email address and or get to me with your home address. I'd like to send you a thank you for being so kind as to retweet our show.
You know, Daz is demanding a gift, too.
Yes, Daz is entitled to a gift.
This is the drunk Sandman, or the Sandman that always gets banned from the board?
The Sandman who always gets banned from the board.
Okay.
At the ladder.
So the same one.
Yeah. So both of you, Daz and Sandman.
His big moment of fame was when he asked the Monty Burns question on the Wrestling Observer Radio.
It was amazing.
And they started answering the question serious.
Yeah. I don't know that anybody bought that old mansion.
That was embarrassing.
So anyway, Daza and Sandman, please get back to me with an email, home address, and what the heck, include your shirt size. We'll see what I can do.
Now, Craig, I'm sure you're expecting this show to be 90 minutes, but it is set for 2 hours, so we don't have to do 2 hours, but I do expect to do at least two more subjects tonight. And these are going to be a couple of ones.
It's not about the girl, is it?
No, dude. We're going to talk about like two of three. The three most famous incidents from the early 80s as far as wrestlers versus the police, because these weren't just charges. These were actually wrestlers versus the police. And
go ahead.
Is the Jimmy Snuka incident on the list?
Jimmy Snuka, I am actually at the end of the list, but I will go to our page on the board. And but yeah, the Jimmy Snuka thing.
Well, basically, the Jimmy Snuka story is, and it's actually hard to say what the story is because no one really seems to know everything that happened or what was going on. But basically, by the end of the night, Jimmy Snuka's girlfriend was dead, and Jimmy Snuka, in a towel, took on about 20 police officers at a Howard Johnson's and was whooping some police ass until finally the numbers caught up to him and they were able to bring him down after, after there was about 20 of them, because he laid a whooping on a whole bunch of them. And who knows whether, I guess the consensus is that he killed his girlfriend, but there's just not enough, there ever enough evidence to.
The story I heard was they stopped on the side of the road so she could get out and pee or something like that, and she had fallen down and hit her head, got back in the car, went to the hotel, and then next day she was dead, I guess from injury from when she fell and hit her head. That's just a story that I heard him say.
Yeah. But, who knows what really happened? Maybe it was an accident, you know, maybe they were fucked up on alcohol or drugs, and maybe it was some kind of accident, and just, you know, she fell, hit her head or something, or... You know, maybe he was crazy.
It was the same night as Eddie Gilbert's car wreck.
Yeah, it was. It was the same night as Eddie Gilbert's car wreck. Because they went to the same hotel. And they said that, Eddie was kind of half out of it. He said, he thought they were talking about him. They said that not going to make it. So he thought they were talking about him not going to make it, but they're actually talking about Snooker's girlfriend not going to make it. And if there's ever a visual that I can actually see in my head, I can actually see Jimmy Snuka with a towel wrapped around him, acting like, you remember after, like, Piper smashed the coconut and Piper finally took off?
Yeah,
and
he had that
wild
look on his face when he shorted that door.
He had that crazy look and going after the door. I can see that. I can see him with that crazy look beating the shit out of 20 cops.
Buddy's told that story on the air, right, that what he knows about it?
Probably.
Okay. I don't want to put words in Buddy's mouth, but Buddy's like 100% sure that he did it.
Yeah. A lot of people are. There's just no, like, real, you know, there's just no evidence or witnesses or, you know, it's one of those big what-ifs, but it's like one of those big what-ifs where everyone has a pretty good opinion of what happened. But, like, no one can really prove it. But, that was a famous incident. I mean, even from back then, before, like, the internet, I mean, that was 20 years before the internet. And, you know, it's one of the things that everybody kind of knew about. Then you didn't know every little detail, but you knew something happened. You know, you knew she was dead, and you knew he took on a bunch of cops.
Right.
Yeah.
And what else
Okay, well, then another one, because I think it got these guys fired. It was Rob Van Dam and Sabu 30 years earlier. And that was when the Iron Sheik and Hacksaw Jim Duggan, who were feuding on national TV, got pulled over in New York or New Jersey or somewhere around there. And Duggan had a bunch of weed on. Well, no, he had like a couple joints on him. And then the Iron Sheik had some cocaine on him. And they got arrested and they got fired because, like I say, they were feuding at the time, but yet they were riding and getting high and drinking together on the road.
Right.
And they were in both big positions. I mean, at the time, Duggan was like the number 2-3 baby face. Sheik was one of the, he'd been tag team champion, and he had a good position at the time. And,
I remember reading about that in the aftermags of all things.
I know, right? That was like the first. That was like the first legitimate thing like that that I ever remember reading about in the aftermag.
And it's still, I was so young, I didn't even understand what they were talking about. Like, how were these people? What were these people riding together? I know they did said Hacksaw got rehired back in July, when I think he was Paul Bosch told Vince into bringing him back so he could do like Paul Bosch's retirement show in Houston. And he wrestled Ted DiBiase, and that got him his job back. And the Sheik, he came back later, but I don't think he stayed very long.
That was. I don't think he ever got his run as high as that after that, really. Because, you know, that's actually not that far from him being the world champion, when you really think about it. I mean, he wasn't champion for very long, but he was the world champion. Isn't that amazing that he actually was the world champion at one time?
Crazy.
Yeah. He's also very entertaining on Twitter.
Ren throws out Ken Patera destroying a McDonald's or something.
Well, it wasn't just Ken. It was Ken Patera and Mr. Saito, okay? And...
Okay.
Contreras might know a little more of the details, but basically what I think happened was they went through McDonald's after it was already kind of closed. They kind of were trying to ask if they could still get some food, and I think maybe one of the kids back there kind of told them some shit or, you know, was fucking with them, and they decided to break down the door, go in there, cook their own food, and when the cops came, they decided to beat the shit out of the cops, including one cop, which was a female cop, who got the shit kicked out of her bad. And
they were dead to quit, I think.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they fucked her up bad. But basically, Saito and Ken Patera, who was, I don't know if he was in the Olympics, but I know he was in the Pan American Games. He was in a lot of strongman competitions. He was just a jacked up jacked up dude. I mean, for that time, I mean, there weren't too many guys. Just like him and Tony Alice were like the most jacked up dudes. And, you know, Saito was, Saito wasn't jacked up at the time. Like he got like later on when he was like the Japanese Steiner brother they used to call. But he was still a big dude, you know, bigger than your average dude. And they just laid waste to these cops, the first ones that got
there. The thing with the cops happened back at their hotel, they got refused service at the McDonald's. They got pissed. Patera picked up a boulder and threw it through the window. And then they went back to their hotel. And then the cops came. And, you know, they had the big fight with the cops. And I think they both spent, 2 years in prison or something. I think it was 2 years.
We got the story right here.
I don't think Saito was in jail as long as Patera, but Patera was in jail because you remember they made the whole thing about him getting, what do you call it, when you correct yourself in the prison. You know, they had the whole baby push. He got the baby push because he was rehabilitated.
the story is actually at the end of our list right here. The funny thing, it says, Patera threw a boulder through the window of the building, and it says, in parentheses, Patera claimed that the former employee threw the rock, but he had received the blame. So the man inside the McDonald's, who was the employee, there just happened to be a boulder in the restaurant, and he threw it. Anyway, makes no sense. Yeah, Patera was in the WWF. He was sentenced to 2 years in prison at the time. Oopsie.
Remember when he threatened Gabe, Ed?
The what?
Remember when he threatened Gabe?
No. Tell the
story. Patera, you never saw that? Greg, you know what I'm talking about?
No.
They were doing one of those straight shooting things with Kim Patera. He was going to ask him about that, got the incident, and then he flipped out and threatened to beat Gabe's ass.
Kim Patera is my new favorite wrestler.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
It was something that they both came up with just to fuck with people. It wasn't actually real. But
please leave people alone.
He threatened to beat the shit out of Gabe. So.
I'll throw out one, and I know Craig's going to get mad for me for throwing this one, but we should have segued to this earlier. But
here we go.
Let's talk about the guy who thought he was talking to a kid on the internet and arranged the meetup, and he went to go meet the kid, and when he opened the door, the local city news crew was inside the house with their cameras waiting. And the next thing you know, you see Rob Feinstein running to his car, and this almost ended ROH. I mean, you know what I mean? This could have changed all pro wrestling had that gone down differently if Corey and them wouldn't have gone their own way. You know, they could have just shut that whole thing down. But Rob Feinstein embarrassed himself on national TV, well not national TV, but on the local news. And that got played everywhere. And,
I don't stay with the big guys. I go to kids' houses all the time and watch ROH tapes. Underage children.
Maybe he was delivering tapes.
Boys.
Oh, we know what he was doing. I mean, come on. I know he's... You know, I mean, but the thing is, you know, I don't think they've ever stopped taking his money. Even after that, I think they were still advertising for ROH on, WrestlingObserver.com.
They still advertise our video on WrestlingObserver.com.
You talked about, to me, that's one of the funniest stories just because, you know, I mean, what might have happened is not funny, but the fact that, that he turned up and there's a boom crew and the next thing you know, Rob Feinstein is running to his getaway car to get away. I mean, that's just...
Bunch of creepy internet shit.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, well, he was better off when he was booking it. But
hey, at least Rob's boyfriend was real.
And he had a getaway driver, too, in the car. He had a getaway driver. I don't know who that was.
He was Gabe.
That's like one of the worst things. You know, I was talking about, you know, somebody killing himself. If I got accused of something like that, or that might be the one thing that made me want to off myself. You know, something shit like that.
Okay, when this happened, wasn't that when that one guy was having that one TV show and they were, like, doing... I think this city news crew got the idea from The Catcher. Was it?
To Catch a Predator.
To Catch a Predator. And then one of the guys on that show actually fucking kill himself?
Well,
I think he did. I think it was like a South Park where they kind of, like, did a takeoff on that and, like, the guy actually, like, you know, freaked out and killed himself.
Oh, well, you know, you shouldn't be doing that then, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just pulled up a story. Basically, in Alabama, police are serving warrants that were issued in the 1980s, and anyway, there's a little blurb down here, and thank you to Haphazard. It says, just over a decade, 54-year-old Bobby Lee Eaton of Cherrywood, Arkansas, better known as Beautiful Bobby of World Championship Wrestling fame, failed to appear in 2002 on a DUI charge. And looks like he's in a little bit of trouble.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, those damn Rock and Roll Express and Midnight Express, those bastards are all worse than the Von Erichs, man.
That's not even close to being true.
Oh, come on, man. Ricky Warren owes like $10 billion in child support.
Okay.
Coward.
That's just the one he knows of.
That some bitch.
Oh, my gosh. You're such a homer.
Craig, did you watch The Wedding last night?
Did I? I had a bucket of popcorn and a soda pop next to me when I watched that thing. I was waiting for that.
I actually watched it.
Did you? What'd you think?
Well, I was actually half watching it because I was actually got a call out of the blue from the score I met in Vegas one time. But I thought it was pretty cool. She was awesome, dude. I mean, say what you will about Brooke. She's usually so bad, she's awesome. But, I mean, she was, like, in a state of awesome that I can't even describe how awesome she was.
Was that just because you saw her boobie?
This was before I saw the boobie. She was awesome. I mean,
she's pretty horrible.
It was so campy and bad that it worked 10 times better than it should have.
I'll tell you what. Bully Ray, in that part, was amazing. He was faking being nervous, and I was buying it. It was amazing. And then the swerve at the end with Taz being the Aces and Eights guy, I kind of marked out for a minute. I was like, oh, wow, I didn't see that coming.
It's not going to mean anything worth a shit, but, I mean, it's something. I guess.
Yeah. I had two markout moments this week. Number one, seeing Lance Storm on television briefly. And then number two, seeing Spike Dudley. I don't know why, but
Lance Storm on TV.
He was on Raw. Just
Lance Storm?
In the clips.
Did you watch
the clips? I thought you meant live.
No.
And then I announced on Twitter how I marked out for seeing Lance Storm, and then I get called a mark by Lance Storm.
Well, if the mark shoe fits.
And the funny part is you were agreeing with Craig, of all people.
Well, I was agreeing just to spite you.
Tommy Dreamer's been the most traveled wrestler the last few weeks. He's been on Raw and Impact.
Yeah, no doubt.
That was a heck of a beatdown, I thought, at the end of the show. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the show as a whole, actually. It was good.
They should not give Jeff Hardy, let him talk on the microphone. He's horrible.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Is Jeff Hardy? Is he worse doing interviews, or is his imagination worse?
Oh, jeez.
His imagination is really funny.
Stupid.
It's amusing. But him just talking on the mic, talking about the creatures of the night, and sounds like somebody that doesn't talk very well. I don't know.
It sounds like someone who is on a lot of Vicodin and Soma.
Sounds like somebody that should be a mute.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but his look just doesn't match that voice. You know what I mean?
He looks like a fucking lizard with all that makeup on.
Right. And
he's got some
kind of
contamination or something, some paint poison or something. He was waiting
right.
Right.
And then he starts to speak, and it's very...
It sounds more hate than a chair.
Right. It just doesn't make any sense. I can't put the two together. It's not computing in my brain.
But the best part of Impact was that 5-star match between Gail Kim and Velvet Sky.
Oh, jeez.
Tiffany in the ring. I mean, my God, that was awesome.
Okay, I have to ask. I absolutely hate Velvet Sky's new look.
I prefer the older one, but she still looks good to me. She's got too much clothing on. She needs to show more skin.
She's like a hooker.
She looks kind of like she's trying to do a Betty Page kind of look, and it's just not working for me.
Gail Kim, she was working for me last night, I'll tell you that.
It's because you have an Asian persuasion.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, there you go.
She was looking pretty damn good.
Okay, the show's about to fall off the cliff.
Okay, well,
you go home now.
So what?
Take it home.
Okay, well, do you have any last ones you want to bring up before we wrap it up?
I can't find any more, so I'm good.
How many times have you been arrested, Ed?
I've been arrested twice.
For
possession of marijuana.
No kidding. I am
and
shocked.
And both times it was like about a fucking joint's worth.
Well, it's illegal.
Bastard.
It's true.
It shouldn't be illegal. It should be totally legal. Everyone in the country should be required to smoke marijuana.
No, they shouldn't. We don't need that many crazy people.
No, it'd be a much better place. We'd be more popular in the world if everyone in the United States smoked more pot.
I guess get rid of alcohol and just replace it with dope.
That's a good idea. I'm all for that.
They can make all them anorexic women chicks and smoke dope so they want to eat something, you know?
Right? It's got its benefits, I'm telling you.
But no real
be
alcohol, to be honest.
I'll be honest with you, if I was to replace one or the other, I would definitely take alcohol off the shelves.
Yeah. But real Same. Quick, let's talk about a famous limousine ride where was it Shane Helms and Chris Jericho got into a fist fight?
And then ran off in the night or something?
And then ran off into the night.
I remember throwing one with Jericho. Remember when he smacked the shit out of that one bitch?
Yeah, dude, that was crazy because he was surrounded by people.
He got too much heat.
He was in his car, in the street, I guess, like, you know, it was kind of like traffic, it was kind of like at a dead still, and all these fans get around his car, and for some dumb reason, he gets out of the car. Shit gets a little crazy, people being stupid, and next thing you know, what did he do? He pushed her, or he... I think he just pushed her, but he pushed her.
She kept touching him or something, and then he just kind of reared back, and he just, like, popped the shit out of her or something.
Yeah.
That's a great video. Find that on YouTube.
That could have got ugly, though. I mean, it really could have got ugly.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Did you guys ever see the Dr. D. David Schultz and John Stossel thing?
That is fucking one of the greatest things ever, dude.
I watched that. The first time I ever saw that.
I saw it live.
David Schultz is like a very scary man, just in general anyway.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was like the early He was like an early version of Sid Vicious.
Yeah, and he just, that was like frightening to me when he smacked the shit out of that poor fella. It was like,
yeah, but like, basically, Dr. D, David Schultz was a, he was kind of like Sid Vicious.
He was
a tall, kind of muscular guy. He looked like he was on cocaine all the time because he was just like so intense, just like Sid was, kind of, even more so. And basically, Don Stossel's 2020 is doing a thing on pro wrestling, and basically they're in the locker room, kind of in a hall, and he's talking to the Dr. David Schultz, and he's being and Stossel's is being a fucking dick, okay? He was kind of being a dick about it, and he tells him straight out something like, "Well, I think it's fake," or it's been a few years since I've seen the video, but basically Stossel's just fucking rears back and open hand slaps him right across the fucking, well, I think he got him in the ear. He just, like, smacked the shit out of him. Stossel goes down. He freaks out. He starts trying to get away. And Dr. D basically starts kind of, like, I don't want to say chasing him because they weren't, like, running, but he's kind of, like, following him, talking shit.
He
slapped
him the first
now?
Time, and then he got back up, and then he smacked him again.
Yeah. And then he starts trying, that's when he starts trying to get away, and he's basically following him, and he's like, you know, is that fake? Is that, you know, how fake was that? And then the other wrestlers are laughing their ass off. Like, I think the IFC was there.
Down that hallway is, I see Mr. Fuji with a little Cheshire grin on his face.
Yeah.
After watching all this. But, yeah, that was, Dr. D. David Schultz, he was like, he's like Stone Cold Steve Austin. If you ever listen to their promos, they talk very similar.
Yeah, he was a scary dude. But he ended up, you know, he was gone not long after that, so I guess he got fired because of it. But, I mean, anybody who was a wrestling fan at that time, especially at that time, because that was still when there was still kayfabe, and, you know, it wasn't like today where you know everything. You always, even though you knew it wasn't real, you always had your, you know, in the back of your mind where you wanted to be real and shit. And so any real wrestling fan who saw that was happy as shit and glad that he did that. It was like, fuck you, man.
Here's one more for you. Did you see the one where Hulk Hogan knocked out Richard Belzer?
I saw it, but was that actually, like, did he get in trouble for that?
There was a big lawsuit over it.
Yeah, that is right. Basically what happened is he put Richard Belzer in a front face lock. And I don't think at first he was putting any pressure, and I think maybe Belzer was kind of just playing around, and then he's like, wait a minute, I gotta make it look real, or I gotta, you know, kayfabe and make wrestling look real. So he fucking cinched it in and put pressure, and he put so much pressure, he pretty much, he knocked him out, man. Didn't he even break, like, bust him open or something?
Yeah, because when Hogan let go, I don't think Hogan knew that he was knocked out, and so when he released the hold, he hit his head on the floor or something. And
yeah, he just went down. It was like a UFC fight where you know, the guy doesn't tap and he gets choked out. I mean, he basically, God, Richard Belzer is a skinny little dude. You know what I mean? And big ass, and that's what Hogan was at his peak. You know what I mean? Peak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, are we done?
I guess. Oh, what?
Are we done?
I guess so. You got any parting words, Craig?
No. I think we've wrapped everything up. Nice.
Okay. Katrina, you got any parting words?
No.
Okay. Well, everybody come back next week. We'll have something planned for next week. So everybody come back next week, and we will talk to everyone then. Like, we'll find a stupid opening theme song. What the hell? Play.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the man's shit. Let's go hook him up!
Terry Funk is going crazy! Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass. I'm gonna dog you until I wear your Texas ass out.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.